really good to be here with you all. This was one of those weeks where I was glad to know Sunday was coming and I could be with people I love and who love each other. So originally I was going to talk about democracy, and Jill told me somebody had asked for a sermon on self-care in dark times, and I said, I think the request was like, oh, could you do this sometime? And I was like, I think I need this now. can we drop democracy? Maybe we'll come back to it. But self-care, this is good. This is needed. I'm going to start with Wendell Berry, because, you know, it's never bad to read a little Wendell Berry. You'll know this, some of you, I'm sure. The peace of wild things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water. And I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. I could just stop there and have you all just think on that poem, and that might work. But it turns out I have a few other things to say. So, this idea of self-care. I want to say what I'm not going to talk about today, because I know a lot of times when I hear the phrase self-care, I start creating a to-do list in my head. Do any of you do that? It's like, oh yes, I should eat better. I should make sure I sleep enough. I should make sure I get exercise. I should. And it's this list of things that often competes with other lists of things in my life. Like, I should clean the house so the rest of my family can walk around without falling. I should go to work. I should do this. I should do it. You know, so my whole life then becomes a to-do list. And it all feels like too much, especially when we have a week, a month, a year, a few years, a decade like we've had. With the news cycles that don't ever seem to actually be cycling out of anything, things just keep coming at us. And people we know are hurting and dying and being excluded when we wish they would be included. And we feel overwhelmed is the word I keep coming back to. And there's a lot about our lives and the way we live them these days that leads us to feel overwhelmed even before we get all the bad news. And so I want to talk a little bit about how we maybe can think about self-care to open up new possibilities for ourselves and our world. But first, why? Why, if the world needs so much, and I do think all of these things are begging for our attention, and they're begging for us to all look for the ways we can just create a little bit of change, because if I can open up a little space for change, and you can open it up, and somebody else can open it up, and you can open some up, eventually we'll start moving. We have been moving. But so why? Why, when the world needs us to look outward and move, do we also need to look in? One of my favorite reasons for why we need to attend to our own care is an old poem by Rumi, 13th century? Yes, 13th century Persian mystic. And he says, "What will our children do in the morning? Will they wake with their hearts wanting to play the way wings should? Will they have dreamed the needed flights and gathered the strength from the planets that all men and women need to balance the wonderful charms of the earth so that her power and beauty does not make us forget our own? Love so needs to love that it will endure almost anything, even abuse, just to flicker for a moment. But the sky's mouth is kind. Its song will never hurt you, for I sing those words. What will our children do in the morning if they do not see us fly?" And so whether or not you have real live children, you know, the short kind, in your life, there are people around us always. I don't know about you. We're social animals, right? We watch each other. We need each of us to care for ourselves, to learn to fly so those around us can learn to fly. So those around us know that there are options, that there are dreams we haven't thought to dream yet that need to be dreamt. There are ways to fly, to leave this earth, to create new things. What will our children do if they do not see us fly? So we have to learn to fly. We just have to. And that's what I think self-care is about sometimes. And then again, self-care in dark times. I do want to say dark times. I think we have this feeling, some of us anyway, that somehow things are worse now than they have ever been. And you don't have to study a whole lot of history to realize that maybe, maybe not. Human history has always had hard times. There's always been darkness. There have sometimes been stories of progress. There have sometimes been stories of the overcoming of darkness, if you will, by the light, of movement toward something, toward nation states in Western Europe and how wonderful they are. That's one story. Towards the sun never setting on the British Empire. There have been stories of living in 1950s America, where everybody has everything they need and everything's so much more convenient than it was for our parents. We've always had those stories, and in the middle of all those stories, there have always been people who have not been part of those stories. The people pushed out to the margins, the people not included, the people not with access to the resources they need to enjoy the light, the progress. So that darkness has always been here. So much of what we're living with now is old things coming to light. And that feels horrible. And yet, some of that is simply learning who we are and who we have been, and that gives us such a better place to start for in trying to open up space for change in the world. So I don't want to dwell on trying to decide whether this is worse now or not. It's always been hard to be human in some ways, and there have always been reasons to hope, to get up in the morning, to go and rest for a time in the peace of wild things, to know that there is comfort in the world. And so I'm trying to construct a model of self-care that is not in competition with care for others and care for the world. I think sometimes we think of that as, you know, especially when we start doing to-do lists. And, you know, the people who are really good at the to-do list thing, they tell you you should, you know, estimate how much each of those items on your to-do list will, how much time that will take you to do, right? And you figure that all out. And by the time I've read all the instructions for how to do a good to-do list, it's lunchtime and I haven't started anything yet today. And I'm also like, oh my goodness, how do I... And, oh, maybe I should go read somebody else's method So I'm trying to say, how can we take care of ourselves without making ourselves crazy, trying to learn the right way to do it? Right? So I think there's a couple of things that help me, and maybe they'll help you. One is trying to understand and acknowledge how complicated we are as persons. And I love neuroscience. I don't quite get it, and I never remember the right names for any of the processes or hormones or parts of the neural system that I'm talking about. But it's fascinating to me how much we have come to understand in the last couple of decades about how we work as human selves, how we make decisions, how we behave in moral ways or not, how we experience ourselves, and how that influences how we show up in the world for each other. And so I want to start first with what is a blessing. That's where I want to start there. I found this from a Methodist minister named Jan Richardson, who writes out of the Christian tradition, but beautiful, beautiful, mostly blessings. And I love the idea of blessing because it recognizes that something is holy, that a moment it can be sacred, that a person is sacred. And it's a lot like saying, hello, worth and dignity of every person. Hello, interconnection of everything. So this is a blessing. And she's titled it, Beloved is Where We Begin. If you would enter into the wilderness, do not begin without a blessing. Do not leave without hearing who you are. You are beloved, named by those who have traveled this path before you. Do not go out without letting it echo in your ears. And if you find it is hard to let it into your heart, do not despair. That is what the journey is for. I cannot promise this blessing will free you from danger, from fear, from hunger or thirst, from the scorching of sun or the fall of the night. But I can tell you that on this path there will be help. I can tell you that on this way there will be rest. I can tell you, you will know the strange graces that come to our aid only on a road such as this, that fly to meet us bearing comfort and strength, that come alongside us for no other cause than to lean themselves toward our ear and with their curious insistence whisper our name, Beloved, Beloved, Beloved. And I like this because I think part of the way we can care for ourselves in a way that allows us to show up to care for the world is to know that we are all beloved. And we are often not beloved in the ways we wish we were. We are always imperfect in the ways we love each other. But by being here, I think being beloved is another way to think of having inherent worth and dignity, which is the first of the seven UU principles. To have inherent worth and dignity means you are beloved. You matter. You are here and you are part of things. You are part of the web and you are loved. And because we are not always good at knowing this about each other, we need to practice knowing it for ourselves. We are in this life, this game, this world for the long haul. Change happens. It happens slowly. So we need to take good care of ourselves and learn how to nurture ourselves and to comfort ourselves to be able to show up for each other. One of my favorite tools, I think I mentioned neuroscience. I found a new book. It's a couple years old now, but it's new to me. Buddha's Brain, The Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom by Rick Hansen. And I'll have it if anybody wants to look at it. It's really fun because it has like diagrams of neurons and pictures of the human brain and lists of chemicals and things that do things. But it's also integrated with Buddhist practice, which I find is often really helpful, especially for us Unitarian Universalists, because there is an emphasis on observation, both of the world and of the self, and a very practical, do what works kind of attitude. So Rick Hansen, who has a PhD, and his co-author, Richard Mendius, who's a neurologist, they've written this book that has lots of really practical information about our brains. And this book and some other things that I've read, and some of which I'm sure some of you have read also, we know from science that our brains have a bias toward the negative. We remember so-called negative experiences, the things that hurt us, that cause us pain, that cause us to be afraid. We remember those better than the good times. if somebody gives us three compliments and one criticism, guess which one we're playing over at 4 a.m. in the morning? It's the criticism. And this is the way our brains are set up. And that had evolutionary, it was an advantage. At other places and times in our evolution as human beings, we survived better because we paid attention to what was negative. So Hansen and Mendius actually sort of say there's three main survival strategies that's of interest to them things that are happening in our brains that happen over millions of years of evolution. We got three fundamental strategies for survival. One was creating the idea of separations between things, to have boundaries between the self and the world, between my group and the other group. And that was evolutionarily fit. It helped people survive. Even separations between one mental state and another. So happiness and sadness. We learned to divide things up and put them in categories, and it helped us stay alive. And then we have a bias toward maintaining stability, not changing things. This made me think about toddlers and how they're famous for not liking new foods. You know, you have to put it in front of them for 10 million times, and then they'll pick it up because it looks familiar finally. Well, that's evolutionarily fit if you don't have a little person walking off from mom and picking up a bad mushroom or whatever. But our brains are wired to keep all our systems in balance by avoiding change. Because once we've got it right, let's not rock the boat, okay? And then the other thing our brains do as a matter of course is to try to look in the world around us and decide whether something, an opportunity, a thing in our environment, another person, is an opportunity for a good experience or a threat, a danger. And to approach opportunities and avoid threats. And Hansen argues that those three survival strategies, while they work really well, obviously our species has flourished, they're really effective for survival, but they weren't created to make us feel good. They weren't created to make us feel balanced and centered and to show up without anxiety in the world. They were created to keep us alive long enough to pass our genes on to our progeny. And they did that. But they inherently set us up for suffering. And this is where he gets all Buddhist. And if you're interested in Buddhism, by all means, read this book. It's really good. They set us up for suffering because it is not true that everything is separate. It is true that everything is connected. And when you try to maintain those separations, you end up causing lots of hurt and pain for yourself and for others. And we see this, and we know this, and our brains still keep trying to get us to categorize everything into us and them and this and that and good and bad and opportunities and threats. Everything keeps changing. Our brains are wired to help us stay unchanging, to maintain stability, but everything's changing. And opportunities, they may be really good. Something really good may come, and we may be ecstatic. I got the new job. Well, guess what? That's exciting for so long. And then the new boss kicks in, or the new annoying coworker, or the frustration with not being able to learn your job as well as you want to, as quickly as you want to. Behind every opportunity to be happy, to feel fulfilled, to feel validated as a person, there are multiple opportunities to be frustrated, to be annoyed that that thrill wears off, to have to deal with other human beings who may or may not be amenable. So all of this makes us suffer. And so one of the ways that many of us, and I think this is more and more, and we heard during Joys and Concerns people talking about anxiety and talking about young people and suicide, and because I live, my life is full of adolescents right now, I live in that world where I see our young people are really anxious, but we adults are really anxious often too, and I worry about this. And so I think part of self-care in dark times is for us to learn to watch ourselves and to ameliorate that anxiety, to call into question sometimes those ways that our brains are programmed to work that may not serve us well, that may make us forget that we are connected, that we are beloved, that we turn to each other, and that usually works out well. Usually, no matter what somebody's politics are, they don't hit me when we're driving down the street in opposite directions. We are also wired to cooperate. We are wired to be with each other as much as we are wired to put up roadblocks to that togetherness. So how do we learn to manage ourselves so that we can show up and be with other people? And this is what I mean by self-care. When I think and talk about self-care, I don't mean something that requires me to shut my door and run a big bathtub and sit in it without interruption for 3 hours, although that can be nice and sometimes necessary and not necessarily a bad thing at all. But I mean we need to learn ways to see and nurture and care for and to understand ourselves that don't require that we not be in the world and with each other as well. So some of that is simply about learning to notice. And this is a matter of practice. This is why I think people who undertake a meditation practice often find it transformative. This is why people who come to church week after week after week, our brains do, this part I don't understand so much, but being in a room together, our brains affect each other. Our being here together, our energy, if you will, and we change, and we experience something different than if we were at home in front of the TV this morning. And not just because of the quality of what we're watching on TV, but because we are with each other. So, I wish that I had a list. And lots of people do have lists. If you really want a list of good self-care practices, you can go find any number of them online, in books, at the store, go to your doctor's office. You can probably get a nice list from someone there. For me personally, those throw me into a tizzy because I'm like looking for the best right list of how to take care of myself. And at the end of the day, that becomes one more to do. I have to read that article before I figure out how to do. But if we can learn simply to stop. And this is where I love Wendell Berry's poem, and it's an old one, and I go back to it over and over again. How do we learn to rest as animals in the world of the wild things and share that peace, which is part of our inheritance? As human animals, we are part of this web, and we are part of the animal world, part of the world beyond the animals. And it blows my mind that it isn't just animals and plants and rocks anymore. There's all sorts of things in between all of that. What's a virus? Oh, my goodness. But we are part of that, and part of what feeds us, what nurtures us, what allows us to show up and be with each other as human beings is not about our uniquely human capabilities. It's not just about thinking and analyzing and coming up with lists of values and making judgments about each other. It is about breathing. It's about inhabiting our bodies. It's about knowing how the breath and the bodies change or can change what's happening in our brains. And some of you know way more about the brains than I do, and I know that. And I'm glad you do. But we need to become experts on ourselves. We need to enter into that study of ourselves in order to accept ourselves, to observe, and to learn how to tweak. Hansen in this book suggests if you're feeling triggered by something, a negative feeling, a fear, an anxiety, try remembering at the same time, not trying to tell the fear to go away, but remember a time when you were held and loved. Remember a time you felt comforted and loved and safe. And that will actually, he says, rewire your brain subtly. Because remember, we've got that negativity bias. But he says we can choose to focus on the beautiful things. We can choose to focus on the good things in our lives. And we can replay. When we remember something, our brain doesn't know the difference between remembering it and actually experiencing it. So if you choose to rerun the tapes of the good things, the good interactions, the times you felt loved and safe and happy and whatever it is that gives your life meaning to feel, if you choose to remember those things over and over again, it helps your brain hold those better. And it gives you something to balance off all those times that you are remembering over and over again the negative thing, the criticism that someone offered you, or the time that you, maybe nobody said anything, but you were disappointed in yourself. There is no need to play that over and over and over again to be a good person. It actually gets in the way. And I don't know about you, but I know when I am worried about my worth, when I am worried about how things are going to work out, when I'm worried I'm going to miss doing the right thing and it will have some negative consequence, I can't show up and be here for you. I can't show up in the same way to have the same kind of conversation I can have when I feel calm and centered, when I know that I am loved. One online teacher that I work with sometimes starts sessions of sort of like guided meditation sessions with, look around the room you're in right now. Is there anything that will eat you? Is there anything in this room that can eat you? Yeah. Tell yourself, I am safe. Nothing will eat me if I sit down right now. And just think. If I just sit down and breathe, I'll be safe enough to do that right now. There's nothing here that will eat me. Because parts of our brain come from a time when all animals everywhere in the world were always worried about predators. We are not the biggest, strongest thing on the face of the earth. So we were worried. There were things that could pop out of the woods and squash us. So sometimes it helps just to look around the room and actually, even though it feels silly, say, nothing here will eat me. I can close my eyes for a few minutes. I can just sit and be for a time. Another reason why I think it's very important to practice self-care is that we need to hold on to hope. As no matter how dark, no matter what the news is or how many layers, and things do pile up, I know they do, we need to nurture hope. Brian Stevenson, in his 2017 Ware lecture at the UUA General Assembly, the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, said there are four things we need to do to create justice in the world. Only four is a very short list. Only four. One of them is stay hopeful. Don't let despair take hold. Despair is the enemy of justice. Hope is what allows us to move toward justice. And so if he says hope needs to be one of my top four priorities, I say, okay, I'll do that. I'll try. And hope is not, it's not some pie in the sky. It needs, I think, to be active and rigorous. It's a hope that keeps us ready for that long haul. We're in it. And we're in it to look, I loved your story about the tree falling on you. Oh, how terrible. Oh, but you learned something important. It's good news. It's bad news. It's good news. It's helpful news. It opens up the way forward in one place. And so much in life is like that. I still think the 2016 elections were one of those moments for us. We got information we didn't have before. We're still processing it. We don't know. Things are breaking loose all over the place. And some of that is going to create greater change than we could have had in different ways than we could have had. if that election had gone elsewise. I don't know what's going to happen. It's happening now. People are voting. If practice of democracy, another one of our important values. So please, I'm just going to ask you to make sure you go vote. I don't know how these elections are going to turn out. However they turn out, we will learn more about ourselves collectively. We will have things that need doing. We will have next steps. We will have people who need us to show up for them, to have their backs. We will need sometimes to show up for ourselves and say, this is not okay. How can we work together? What conversations do we need to have to change things? And we can only do that. We can only show up for those conversations for those other people if we take care of ourselves and stay centered. And so how do you do that? You know what? It's going to be different for everyone. And I'm sorry. This is not a cop-out. I say this a lot. I can't tell you how to do this. And this is part of the problem of being Unitarian Universalist. We say everyone finds their own path. And so this is another one of those places. We're always in one of those places where you have to find your own path. I say watch for the things that help you stay present. Somebody I read this week putting this together said, look for the things that magnify your spirit. You know, artists, writers, experiences, friends, people, conversations you have. What magnifies your spirit? What makes